Slacker Podcast. Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast. Slacker Podcast. Happy New Year, Slackers. I hope you're all good. My name is Phil Taggart, and this is the Slacker Podcast, a podcast about music, the early demos, and all the interesting shit that you want to know about the brightest and best new artists in the world. And as you can hear from my voice, I am incredibly, incredibly dosed at the minute. I don't know what it is. Every Christmas, it's the same. Load of family get together. Oh, I haven't seen you in so long. Oh my God, you've lost weight. You look amazing. Let's go out. Oh, we have a couple of beers. Yeah, let's go. Yeah, let's go out. Getting absolutely trashed. And then 3 days later, the whole house, the other house that you were out with, making it sound like Game of Thrones, everybody is absolutely doomed. I've got a chest infection and I feel absolutely amazing. And it is what? I'm recording this on the 2nd of January and I'm officially back to work today. Which is great. Maybe, does this make me sound sexy when I sort of have a croaky voice, or do it just sound like I'm dying? Either or, I'll try and get back to some sort of level of normality. I hope you all had a good Christmas. I hope you're all fat, and I hope you got all the Christmas presents you wanted. I got about 12 pairs of pants, and 10 of them were from my missus. My missus actually bought me a pair of pants with her own face on the front of it. So there's a image for you all for 2019. Also, half of them are about five sizes too big for me too, so I'm basically walking around in fat man pants at the minute. So that was my Christmas, and that was my presents. I mean, life is a roller coaster. Ronan Keaton was always right. So if you have listened to the podcast before, then you know exactly what's coming. We're going to be playing a demo from Novelist, who we have on this week. And we will be chatting to Novelist about various different parts of his career coming up. I mean, Novelist is quite young. I think he's like 19, 20 years old. But the dude, he's just got like a wise head on his shoulders. Like, you can talk to him about absolutely anything. Nothing was off limits in this conversation. Everything from the sort of origins of grime music, his faith growing up, how he got into music, how important his family is. What's it like growing up in Lewisham, knife crime, him getting stabbed himself when he was quite young and releasing his debut album, being an independent artist, and all the rest of the stuff that comes with it. There's loads of great stuff on there. I really, really enjoyed sitting down chatting to him as well. And just before we get into this week's podcast, I want to remind you that the Slacker Club Night is going on tour in February. So if you like really, really good live music, then this is the place for you. We have the Magic Gang, who will be performing live each of the nights. We have a super amazing band called Touts, who are the support band, who will be on the tour as well. So that's two incredible live bands as it is. I'll be DJing a little bit, I'll be hanging out, and probably drinking beer, I would imagine. Yeah, Dry January will be well done by then, because we are going to Southampton, Reading and Margate. That is February the 20th in the Engine Rooms in Southampton, February the 21st in Sub 89 in Reading, and February the 22nd in Dreamland in Margate. If you want to go to any of those, if you live around that area or you want to make the pilgrimage, then I will put a link to tickets below in the description of this podcast. Okay, right, let's get into it. This week's Slacker Podcast with Novelist in 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen and good people of the gallery, I introduce you to the one and only Novelist.
Yes, Phil, what's going on, brother?
Are you good, man?
I'm lovely, thank you.
What's your full name?
My full name is Kajol Quentin Kankam.
And Novelist was the first thing that came to your head? You were like, right, that's me now.
Well, do you know what? It actually got passed down from my uncle. So my uncle, he's the original Novelist, so he's OG Novelist.
What did your uncle do?
He was a musician as well, but he does a lot of stuff. Hardworking man, but it's like he was making music in his house, so he wasn't really an out there artist or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But the alias he went under was Novelist, so I said, yeah, let me have that.
But surely if he's OG novelist, that makes you Lil novelist.
Yeah. Younger novelist.
I kind of feel like that Lil Pump, Lil Uzi Vert.
No, Lil, yeah, that comes after, like, there's got to be a younger first, so there has to be an older, then a younger, then
yeah,
a
but like Lil Xan, was there a Xan before Lil Xan? Was there an Uzi Vert before a Lil Uzi
Vert? I don't know
how
they do it in America, but over here it's like there's ranks, innit?
Exactly, you're not going to be called Junior if somebody hasn't been called, like your dad hasn't been that name before, you
exactly,
know?
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to play the demo. That's always like the nicest place to start with this podcast.
Yeah.
And we've been sort of sending each other backwards and forwards. I haven't been sending you demos. It's me and my ukulele. It's me and my ukulele. It's me and my ukulele. Put me on your label. We've got a demo from you, and you can introduce it to me, because we had one, but you changed it up last minute.
Yeah. Well, this song is called My Ends. This song's called My Ends. I made this when I was 17.
Oh, right.
17 or 16. Yeah, and this was just about... basically, my ends is how I saw things in my ends.
I ain't really got one care in the world, I just hope people listen. You got your life, I got my life, I'll show you how they're different. Grew up in a hood where not any good resources ain't sufficient. And trying to have a normal day in the bits is like a mission. Round here, nobody ain't that real. My ends are like a film. Got some that are good, got some that are bad, but either can get killed. My life is way too real, but still I like it like this. My life is way too exciting, that's why I'm writing like this. Let me show you about my ends. Let me show you about my ends. About my ends. Show you about the roads. I'ma show you about ends and show you about my dress code. I'm a black youth in a tracksuit every day, that's how I roll. Don't really care if I get stopped by the feds or 5-0. Even when the ends are hot, they feel cold. Gats and bats and cats in the back of the flats to make dough. Better keep on the low key, don't wanna slip on the main road. Cause no one ain't your friend these days, that's how it goes. Let me show you about my ends. Let me show you about my ends.
Demo from Novelist. What was that track called?
I've got Ends, that's already out.
Yeah.
And that song was called My Ends. So that was a song basically explaining how I felt about my ends and what it's like growing up around it.
How did you, I want to get to that in a second, but I actually kind of want to talk about how you actually got to produce that, how you got to, what it would have felt like spitting on that track if it's one of your first demos. Like the first thing that comes to my mind, both on production and the bars, is that like it bangs way too hard for it to be somebody's first go.
Yeah, man. Do you know what? Like I've always been inspired by a certain type of sound, and I wanted to be one of the artists in the UK who had a legendary album and who made legendary music. And the only thing that I could really put my hand on that was on that level for me at the time was like Boy in the Corner. So I listened to that. I was like, okay, I see what Dizzy did there. Yeah, that was cool. But I didn't want to copy him in any ways. So I just tried to make beats that didn't sound like nothing else.
Yeah.
And somehow people would say, oh yeah, this is like Dizzy. But they weren't saying it sounded like Dizzy. They were saying it was just like different. And the only person they could relate that to was Dizzy. So that's kind of where I was trying to go with my music. I just wanted to make something that banged, that was fast. I could spit halftime on it as well. And, you know, it was just different and very London sounding.
Yeah, man, like if an alien dropped into the studio right now and was like, what is the young sound of London? I'd probably play him that record.
Yeah. What you got, man?
In terms of like your rapping ability on that, like, you know, you're spitting hard and you're spitting fast.
Yeah.
That doesn't come overnight. You didn't wake up the day before this and go, I'm going to produce this demo and nah. Like that has to come with a lot of hard work and dedication, right?
I mean, I used to do so much radio. I've been spitting for years, even before the public knew me. So like some people would call me a flow bender. Like I can do all different types of flows, and I just wanted to hit up that track with a very fast and it's like the way I'm MCing on that particular track is like I'll get fast and I slow it down, and you know, I just wanted to do different things because at that time I was just trying to be as creative as I could on each record that I was making. I got so many tunes from that time that's not even out.
Like, how real is what you're talking about in that song?
How real is it?
Like is that a document of Lewisham? That's where you're from, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a document of just like how I felt experiencing everything. Like even in the intro, you heard a police siren, and that's how it felt when I was like 16, 17. You know, that's when life started to get real. That's when you first start experiencing certain sorrows that you wasn't experiencing before. So, you know, it was something to speak about. I didn't want to just project pain into the world, but I wanted to explain that I'm from a place where there's a lot of good and a lot of bad going on as well, isn't it? And it's, things can go either way at any point, depending on what you're doing with yourself.
What was Lewisham like growing up? Because like I always had this idea of what it would be like to live in inner city London, but from my perspective, I lived on a farm until I was like 12, and I lived in a small rural town in Northern Ireland until I was like 18, 19, and I moved away. And it always felt from like watching TV and things that it was tense. There was an atmosphere about it.
Yeah, there definitely was an atmosphere, but it was very fun because, like, you know, I grew up around hundreds of people, thousands of young people, and Lewisham's one of them places. If you're popular, you basically do know everyone, and everyone knows you. And I was one of those people, so like I've got so many stories that I can't even remember most of them. Like,
yeah,
the man them would have to literally tell me, "Hey, Nov, do you remember that day when we did this?" Or that day when it went like this. So I went through a lot, and it was cool. But obviously, when you're going through a lot, you're going through a lot, whether that's good or bad. So, you know, there was things that people from out of London probably would have never experienced that I experienced as a young person. But
yeah, like I'd imagine if you came to where I was from and I showed you how to milk a cow, you'd be like, what's going on here?
Yeah, exactly.
So like when you're at that sort of like tender age of just starting sort of big school when you're like 11, 12, are you still like able to be a kid in and around then? Or like do you have to grow up a little bit faster when you're in the city at an earlier age?
I think you naturally grow up a bit faster. Because when you're around so many different cultures as well, because London's a hub of many different cultures.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah, you just naturally learn more.
Yeah.
You experience different attitudes and different ways of thinking from an early age. So it kind of does advance you in that sense. But when I went to secondary school, you're naive to a lot of things. And even... It depends what your home life is like as well.
Yeah, of course.
I grew up in a close-knit family. You know, I can say that my mum's instilled a lot of good morals in us. And my uncle and my aunt and my nan, etc. It's my family. I grew up in a good family. But, you know, that's just how it was. Like, depending on where you're coming from, that's what will make you pay attention to certain things.
Yeah. And what were those cultures that you were growing up around? Like, was it mean? Like, what were the different sort of flavors that were like around you at that stage?
Well, for example, in like primary school,
yeah,
you'd learn about so many different cultures because there were so many different types of children there, like from all different countries in the world,
uh-huh.
And that was cool because it kind of. It makes you quite open-minded at an early age. You don't just look at people and with a raised eyebrow, whereas some people who's not necessarily experienced different cultures, they may be a bit standoffish.
Does that sort of like mean that like when you were at primary school and when the other people were at primary school, everybody's kind of, you get like that sort of racial equality before you know anything otherwise? Like, so like you just see everybody... different color of skin, different creed, exactly. Different background, different clothes, different fashions, different religions.
Yeah.
Like when you're there with them, when they're 4 or 5 years old, like they're just your friends. They're just people.
They're just your friends, you know? Like that's how it was for me, man. Like especially when I was in secondary school as well.
I can't imagine that you were the bad kid in secondary school. I don't know if you were like, I can't, this is like, you can stop me if I'm wrong, and I often am. I can't see you as the prefect, but I can't see you as the bad kid either.
You say you can see me as the prefect.
I can't see you as a prefect, but I can't see you as the bad kid either. I think you fall somewhere in between.
That's funny you say that, because I was like the kind of guy, yeah, that if I felt like taking the whole lesson standing up, I would do that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Teachers must have loved you.
Yeah, teachers love me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Teachers love me, but at the same time, I had the perfect balance between respecting everybody and knowing when I'm overstepping the mark and when I'm not.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I'm the kind of guy that could get my whole class to be quiet. Like, I could tell my whole class, yo, listen, like, let's actually just get some learning in today.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I might be the guy that when the teacher's left the room, I'm the one who's throwing the paper. Do you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Like, it wasn't really... I wasn't really in school to cause any kind of disruption or anything like that. I didn't want to be that guy. But at the same time, I would take the liberty of doing certain things if I could get away with it.
I mean, like, when you're a young lad, you've got a certain amount of energy in you. Regardless, like, you're all, like, young men and women are meant to cause trouble when they're at that age, and they're meant to be respectful. And, you know, like, it's a very difficult time in a person's life. Because they've got like all, like, you're going through puberty, you're trying to figure out what the world's about, you've got pressure of you having to get certain exams, this, that, and the other. Of course, you're going to go a little bit nuts. Like, I wasn't a model student by any stretch of the imagination. Like, you know what I mean? I haven't been invited back to talk to my school. Do you know what I mean? I'm not waiting on the phone call either. But how important was music in your school? Was it like something that you would talk about a lot, you know, break time and lunchtime? Is it something that you guys lived and like your people, like your crews and stuff, like would live together?
Yeah, me and my boys, we'd always be like spraying bars and rapping. And
yeah,
I remember there was a certain time it was a grime thing at the beginning, and then after that it was a rap thing, because you know, it just started to take over the streets, and obviously that's what we was listening to. Whatever was coming out of the streets is what we was paying attention to. So we started rapping and that. And
who were the grime heroes? Who were the poster boys and poster women of that time?
It ain't really changed, man. Like, you know, there's always the Skeptas, the JMEs. But they're on a massive level now, but to us they was always that big.
Yeah, of course, because like when 2014 came in, That's Not Me opened Skepta and JME to the rest of the world instead of the inner city life, you know?
Exactly. So we was like... We was listening to them guys like from way before.
Yeah, I think like it's weird, right, being my age now, right, and having conversations with people. As I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago actually with somebody, and they're like, who do you like better? Do you like Skepta or JME? Like that question is such a question,
it's a weird question
that you would ask when you're a primary school. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you that question. I would never do that.
No, I don't put any preference anyway.
No, I know that. But like, was it a thing that you aspired to do and be part of, or was it just like part of, you know, your culture and everything growing up?
Do you know what it is like? You never know how your path's going to go. You just know what you're bringing to the table. So, like, I always like Graham. I was listening to all types of guys. I used to listen to Nuff Temper T. You know, many different D Double, like pure different guys. I listened to a lot of guys.
D Double, like when I heard him for the first time, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah,
he sounds so different than everybody
to
else.
Everyone, yeah.
I love D Double, yeah, I really do.
Yeah. It's like I was listening to D Double from early. And but you see when gigs came out.
Yeah.
When gigs came out
is completely different.
Yeah, when gigs came out, that's what everyone was on. So we used to rap and stuff in school. Yeah, we did. And we used to play football, just what normal teenagers do. But I was more in an MCing thing. And I used to even say to my teachers, look, I'm a musician. This is what I do. And it, like around year 11 and stuff, they didn't really understand that I was getting into the music game. Like I was actually going places and doing stuff. So sometimes I couldn't come in. Sometimes I'd want, like, I don't know, maybe leeway on some work or something.
Did they find that acceptable? Were they supportive of that? Or because like I'd find that would be, a lot of teachers would find that quite difficult to understand until you're actually successful, you know?
Yeah, no, it's just a matter of belief, man.
Because it's not like you're the only one in that school that wants to be an MC, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But the difference between me and a lot of guys is that I was doing this from I was about 13. So I really was pushing the whole time through school to be an established artist and learn. Like, I even had merch out when I was about 13.
You did not have merch out?
I had merch out. Well, I had merch.
What sort of merch does a 13-year-old have?
Well, it used
lunchbox.
I used to sell T-shirts, novelist T-shirts.
Yeah,
I was really popular where I come from.
Have you still got those?
I don't think I have any of the originals. But
yeah,
I still have
the designs,
and I'm actually gonna get them redone.
How did you flog them?
Just through Facebook and that. Facebook, talking to people. Because like I said, like where I grew up, I'm at, like people have known me for a long time.
So you've been like a bit of an entrepreneur, like from 13?
From an early age, I have been. But, you know, I've always said to myself, like, in the future, people will look back at the story and have more of an understanding. Because now I'm going through the journey, they're not necessarily going to even really want to pay attention to the, like, beginning. But when they see me as established, people's going to wonder what was happening at the beginning. So, you know,
like, and that's what we're here for now. I'm wondering what was happening at the beginning. And that's why I got you on the podcast. I want to hear about this. So were you like was it mostly about getting yourself on other people's radio shows, or was it more about like recording your own mixtapes and your own demos and getting them out there physically and like, you know, handing CDs out and stuff like that?
I mean, I grew up in the YouTube era when YouTube first started to like take off. So we was just recording freestyles.
And just putting them directly onto YouTube?
Yeah, just recording
freestyles. Are they still there?
Yeah, some of them are still there.
You're not embarrassed by any of them? You've never taken any of them down?
No. You can't really be embarrassed by who you've been. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All you can do is change who you're going to be next.
Uh-huh.
You know, even if you made mistakes in the past, you just got to say, well, that's who I was, this is who I am now, you know what I'm saying? So,
Do you look back at what you were rapping about at that stage? Because, like, you're not... I can't imagine anybody in their early teens or mid-teens is as rounded as... Well, you're very rounded anyway for your age generally. But, like, do you look back at what you were spitting back then and go, oh, God?
Nah, not really, man.
You never, like, went down, like, sort of dodgy paths on what you were singing about or what you were rapping about?
I mean, nah, because of how I was raised.
Like, yeah, because I feel like if I was 13 or 14 and I was spitting, I would have said... It just would have been awful. I would look back at it and go, oh my God, I was such a little shit.
Yeah, maybe because of what was on your mind, innit? Mm. But it's like...
But it's just immaturity, you know?
Yeah, like there's some things that I probably said before that I wouldn't say now at all. Like, I maybe have had some bars that were just... I just wouldn't say now.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But generally speaking, I've kind of tried to keep it all positive throughout my career. That's just a theme.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think that's one of the things that's drawn me to your music so much is like the positivity of your music, but like how you're also willing, not just everybody around you in like your neighborhood or in inner city London, but like everybody in general, willing them on to do better.
Yeah, man. Like
you're like the preacher man of the of Grime and Tugset.
Basically, that's how people see it. Like and. I mean, all I know is that I've been given a voice by God, and I just got to use it for positive and to do the right thing.
You're quite a religious man, aren't you?
I wouldn't even say I'm religious. I'm just a man of faith.
Yeah.
So, because the whole religion thing is like, I mean, the difference where people probably get mixed up here is like religion to me is just like someone has a practice that they do, and it's based on self-righteousness. I'm a believer of Jesus, like, directly. So it's like I have a relationship with him personally.
Yeah.
My thing isn't about, you know, like, I don't see myself as better than anyone, or I can't enforce, but...
I can tell that by the way you carry yourself. Like, even when you walked in here today, you made sure you said hello to everybody before you even just sat down. Yeah. Not a lot of people do that.
Yeah, man. So I'm a man of faith and living by what I feel the Lord is saying to do. So that's where it is, man. And
Do you pray a lot? Do you like speak to Jesus? And
all the time.
Yeah,
all of the time.
And was that instilled in you from an early age?
Yeah, kind of.
I was brought up a Catholic.
Yeah,
and I was brought to Mass every single Sunday.
Yeah.
I'd be my best, landing down, like, very religious grandparents.
Very religious, yeah.
And they got together when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and they hatched a plan for me to be a priest. So, like, you know, I was gonna be the priest of the family.
Well, you see what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah,
with me, nothing was ever forced upon me. Ever. Nothing was ever forced upon me. Like,
I think that's always the best way. You need to find your own.
Yeah, I've made my own mistakes and I've come to my own conclusions, you know? Like, it's, for me, it's, my faith is based on me reading the Bible, like, myself. It's not based on another priest or pastor or anyone telling me to do something.
Yeah.
That's kind of, it's hard to take on. People's got to decide for themselves.
Do you feel you would make a good pastor, somebody that would speak about Jesus, or would you rather just keep that as a personal relationship?
More evangelist, because anyone who professes they're a Christian, they have a commission to tell people about the gospel. Anyone. Yeah. So that's I'm happy to do. I'm more than happy to do that. But I don't think I'm a pastor or anything like that.
It's interesting though. Like, you carry the faith into your music, and do you think that like spurs other people on? Like, does that?
I hope it does.
Yeah,
I really do hope it does, because I know how much Christ has changed my life, and it's not something that you can. You can't make someone see it. Those who choose to see it, they will understand. So that's how it is.
But like, when you say crisis, like, what sort of stuff like changed you, or helped you kind of realize
my confidence, my perspectives, my actions. You know, like, if I make a mistake, it doesn't necessarily weigh on me in the way that it would before.
Yeah,
because I know, okay, I've done this. Let me move forward. I'm not gonna do that no more. That's my whole lifestyle is just better. So I'm really grateful to God for that. And I wish people knew that there's a God that loves them, and all they have to do is just look for him. That's it.
What's it like for like other teenagers that are growing up in Lewisham now? Because like, for me, you know, as we said before, like, I grew up out of here. I'm a blow-in. I've been in London for 6 years. I moved to Bow. I literally moved to Bow because I'd like listened to Dizzy and Wiley.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go live in Bow.
Go see them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm gonna go see them. Go hang out with Wiley and roll deep. But like, you know, everywhere now is talking about, like, you know, the sort of like knife crime, drill music, and all that. Is it a hard place for a teenager to grow? Is it, as they say in the media, like, getting worse?
Yeah. All I'll say, because I can't speak for anyone else. I can speak for myself. I've been stabbed myself. I've been stabbed.
When did that happen?
When I was 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got stabbed in 2011.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I've been stabbed myself. So it's something that's prominent in South London, especially.
Yeah.
You know, it happens. And, you know, like, it doesn't need to happen. But I completely understand the dynamics of why it's happening. So
why is that? Because I don't know.
It's a lot of so many things that you can't directly put the blame. All you can do is try to do your part by pushing a different narrative.
Yeah,
you know, and
but that must be difficult when there's like, you know, when it's happening on a daily basis and you're seeing like, you know, something's happening in Dalston, something's happening in Lewisham.
Yeah.
Like for me, it would almost like if I was a young kid, you'd be absolutely frightened just because like you're seeing it everywhere. You'd like almost be scared to walk down the street.
Well, that's why a lot of these guys got knives, because they're scared.
But then if you've got a knife and you're scared, it's more likely, if you've got a knife or a gun or whatever, like you're more likely to get it turned on you if you don't have one.
Do you know what? I'll tell you one thing, yeah. I don't even know the statistic, but a lot of people's been stabbed with their own knife.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people's been stabbed with their own knife. A lot of people stabbed themselves by accident. And a lot of people, they've got into a predicament and stabbed someone and they didn't even mean to do that. Like, they didn't want to do that. But they left their house with a weapon because they were uncertain of how the course of the day was going to go.
Yeah.
Now there's perpetrators who deliberately, they've got their own problems, so they're making sure they carry their weapon with them. But you know, like life has so many different dynamics to it. You know, there's all different kind of crimes going on, different kind of pains that people are going through, and in my opinion, it's all the work of the devil. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I can't blame anyone. All I can do is preach the gospel and hopefully people will choose to trust in God more than they trust in their knife.
Do you know what? Fair play, it's a novelist. Nothing is off topic for the young Grime MC from Lewisham. He's a very intelligent, very well thought out guy. And I've really enjoyed doing this podcast. We're only halfway through it, by the way. We've still got another 20 or 25 minutes to go. I just wanted to break it up to let you know, if you have been listening to this podcast and it's the first time you've listened, then there are loads of other podcasts that might be there for you. I would maybe suggest going back to the Dizzy Rascal podcast that I did, I think, which is episode 3 or episode 4. Because obviously we're talking about Dizzy with novelists. There's other great ones on there as well. You might like some Wolf Alice, you might like some Bastille, I don't know. Just go through them and see what you like. And also, if you fancy doing it, if you've listened to this before, you know exactly what I'm going to say right now. God, guess. Yeah? Did you get it? Yeah. Please do me a favor. This costs you absolutely nothing to listen to. Like a lot of podcasts out there. It would be amazing if you could do me a little favor and give it a rate and a review on the Apple Podcast platform or wherever it is you listen to it. Anyway, right, enough begging for me. Let's get back into the second part of the Slacker Podcast with Novelist. One thing I really want to talk about, right, is pirate radio, right? Because, yeah. I'm friends with a lot of the DJs on Radio 101 Extra, right? And they talk about pirate radio so affectionately. I'll walk past like DJ Target every time, you'll hear them going, "Inside the place, inside." I didn't grow up with pirate radio at all, but
yeah,
I mean, it just sounds like it would have been incredible.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
pirate radio was jokes because there was nothing stopping you.
Like, you can just jump on, say anything, and like, you know, there's no real, it's not like the BBC, you have to turn up and get your pass and get called in. You have to be in at a certain time. Pirate radio is kind of a bit more rock up and see
rock
how it goes
up, wait your turn, pay your subs.
What do you mean pay your subs?
Paying your subs is like you paying to be there.
Oh, right. How much would that cost?
I mean, it depends. When I used to go with Grand Mixer, I used to pay like £20 or something. But I think that's because he had a residency there.
Yeah.
So it's like...
So what would that get you? Like, what? Like 30 minutes on?
No, you weren't paying for the time because you can go for a couple hours, but you was more paying... I mean, someone's got to run the radio, innit?
Yeah, yeah, sure. So, I get so you. It's not like they're running off ads, is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like... when you take those things into consideration, paying subs weren't really nothing. But I didn't come up in a generation where paying subs was a major thing. That's more like the original guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still seen it done.
But like, was pirate radio still a thing? Because like, we're only looking back like 4 years. Like, was it starting to die off at that stage? Because like, even, you know, some of the stations had become legit. Like Rinse FM, like got its license like years ago.
I think Flex is licensed now as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's where you cut your teeth. Like the same way when I played in bands, right? I'd go and play to like 30 people in a really shitty, sweaty venue in my hometown. And that was how we got our music out to people. Yeah. You played on a pirate radio station that probably only had about 50 or 60 people listening to it at that stage. It's pretty much the same thing. Like,
yeah, yeah, it was. And but what was cool, though, is that that was getting me bookings.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's getting me bookings because imagine being a guy, there's a new guy who's shutting it down every week. Like, you're looking forward to it now. Yeah. So I just put out the tweet, yeah, I'm going on air. People would be getting gassed. They're like, okay, cool, I'm locking in. I used to have certain guys who are expected to shout them out every week. Like, I used to get the texts because there used to be a studio line, innit?
How would you do your shout outs?
Well, I'd say the number on air.
Was it a mobile number, like 077?
Yeah, it was a mobile number. I'd say it on air. Someone will text the number. Oh, yeah, big up novelist, rare, rare, rare. I'm boom, boom, boom from this town.
But did you put on your pirate radio voice to do it?
Nah, inside. I'm not into none of that, man. That's a joke. To me, that's a joke. Like,
yeah.
I don't find that. That was never, like, nothing for me, man.
Nah. It's like, that's kind of, like, old school, though, isn't it?
Older garage guys. No, I weren't doing that. But it's like, I mean, in a sense, I must have had a pirate radio voice because when you're on air, you sound a bit different to how you sound.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you sound like yourself, but, like, amped up by about 25, 50%, depending on how much energy you want to put into it.
Yeah, and I was a bit like that.
So, like, when you go on, like, do you have everything pre-rehearsed? Or are you freestyling? How does it work?
No, sometimes you freestyle. Like, some of my biggest bars came from me freestyling.
I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how people freestyle. I know you have to, like, get better at it, but there must be, like, mental tics where you're going, right, I know this word, and I know that it's going to lead to this word.
You know what it is? That calculation is so fast, you probably can't even figure out how your mind processes.
But it's like grammar, it's like vocabulary mathematics on speed, you know?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
and that's why I feel like people should never doubt the intelligence of anyone, because you never know what someone's thinking or how they're thinking.
I guess, like, you know, like, looking back, people wouldn't have exactly thought that, like, grime MCs, like, you know, traditionally people wouldn't have saw grime MCs as going, oh, look, it's the poet laureate the English degree art, like, artist or whatever, but like, when you actually boil down a lot of the lyrics and what they're doing, it's way more intelligent and way more hardcore and more dexterous than, like, anything that anybody else is doing. Like, it's poetry, really. Like,
it is, but, you know, it is. It depends on what regard someone holds themselves in. If you hold yourself in a certain regard, then people have to acknowledge that. If you don't, then it can go over people's heads.
Speaking of pirate radio, right, like, the whole Corrupt FM thing that they've been doing over the last couple of years is just, like, it's resonated with me so much. Not in my life, like, you know, I didn't grow up with that.
Yeah.
But, like, as a sort of parody sitcom or whatever, it's amazing. I love it.
I think it's hilarious. And you know what I like about them lot, yeah? They've actually made it a legitimate career for themselves as well.
Yeah, exactly. They're selling out shows all over the place.
Selling out shows. Like, people really do enjoy the music. I saw someone in a Corrupt FM t-shirt today.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it made me smile to myself because I'm like, yeah, I know them guys.
Yeah, same. Like, was 2 years ago they dropped that song. Was it Bang?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, they had a song called Bang. And, like, when I was at DJing, I'd mix it into More Fire Crew, Oi, and Lethal Bizzle, Pow, right?
It probably goes so perfect,
so you'd have three, you'd be like, Oi, Pow, Bang, Oi, Pow, Bang, Pow, Bang, Oi.
Depending on how you mix it, innit?
For about two years, I was, like, going out and DJing nothing but grime, right? Yeah, I know. Being, like, a white Northern Irish boy, right?
Yeah.
And going and playing sets in support of, like, P Money and people like that.
Yeah.
Like, I know that, like, I knew that people were, like, looking at me going, what the fuck is going on here?
Who's this guy?
And I love that. I love the fact that, like, you know, from where I'm from, people shouldn't, like, even give me the time of day when it comes to this. But, like, I'm a very big believer in that. As I don't give a shit where the music's from. Music is music, and where it hits you is where it hits you. And I just love the energy of it, because I was a massive, like, punk fan and garage punk fan when I was growing up. And, like, to me, this was, like, the natural succession in like good, energetic, raw music.
I'll say guys like yourself really are expanding the music that's being made. So it's good because, you know, it's always nice when someone you don't expect comes up to you on the road and says, yes, oh yeah, I heard your song on this show, or yeah, I've been listening to you, like, big up man, much love. It's cool. And I've had a lot of conversations with fans on a random because they've heard my music somewhere I didn't expect my music to be played.
In Lidl.
I wouldn't be surprised, man.
Like, where is the weirdest place that you've heard your own track? When I was in my band, I was going in to sign on the Dole. Mm. And while I was in signing on, my band came on the radio and I was like, oh God.
Oh, what did anyone realize?
No, we weren't that big. Like, but our song was playlisted on like a commercial station back home.
Yeah.
And I was literally just signing. You had to go in every 2 weeks to get it. Like, it was £45 a week we were on.
Yeah.
And you had to like sign it. And they were like, what have you done this week to look for jobs? And I used to like go, oh, this, that, and the other. I applied for an off license. I applied for a retail job. I applied for this, that, and the other, and I didn't get any of them. And like, as I was saying that, my band came on, and I was like, that's my band. And she was like, almost looking at me going, your band's on the radio, you must be doing the double, you must be really rich. And I'm like, that is not
doing the double.
Yeah, that is not how it works. We are minus cash.
I'm gonna use that term. That's so funny, bro. Yeah.
If I hear you got a song called "Doing the Double."
I'm not doing the double.
I'm
never doing the double, bro.
So like, yeah, have you ever been like somewhere quite weird and like just like enough tracks popped on and you're like, all right, okay.
Yeah. One time, I must have been out and then someone's gone. Hey, they text me. They're like, "Hey, Nov, your song's on Shooter."
On what?
On Shooter. You know the Netflix series?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, your song's on Shooter. I was like, pfft. I started laughing. Like, cheers, Chasing Status.
Like,
yeah, man.
Nice one, lads.
Yeah, no, they're some good guys, man.
You've never been scared of working with other people. Like, the first time I came to hear your music, I think, was the Mum Dance stuff that you were doing, Mum Dance producing.
Yeah.
You spitting and signed to XL.
Mm. I wasn't signed to XL, but the music was.
The music was, yeah. So, like, you weren't signed as an artist, but that EP was.
Yeah.
But, like, see, the thing is, only you telling that to people will people think that you weren't signed. Because once they see Novelist and XL on
the
same thing,
that,
everybody's thinking, all right, it must be signed to XL. And, like, you know, you were saying that, like, you were a big Dizzy fan back in the day. People must have been like, right, because Dizzy came out on XL.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, all right. It's round two.
I know, that's what everyone was saying. And I was like, blood, like, you lot don't get it.
Calm down.
Like, chill out, bruv. Like, it's so funny because the way I've chosen to make my path go, like, people have so many misconceptions about it. And I'm like, blood, like, where are you lot getting all these ideas from? Yeah, but
he's going to be the next Adele.
I know, and I was like, blood, like, allow me, man. I just want to just be independent and just make music at my own will, and if I want to take a hiatus, do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You don't want that pressure, but I think that comes with being a grime artist as well. Some people go down the major record label route, some people go down the independent route. It's whatever suits.
Yeah, exactly.
And with you, it's like independent. You are Mr. Independent, really, aren't you? Like,
basically,
you've got.
I'm actually like just some indie guy.
Yeah, you're like, you've got Tug Set and you've got Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, take me through Tug Set and Yeah.
Tug Set is just, like, a brand that I've set up for any one of my boys who wants to just roll with me in this music thing. So, you know.
Is it, like, what? Do you refer to it as a crew? Do you refer to it as... No. What do you refer to it as?
I mean, how can I describe the Tug Set, man? Like, Tug Set's who I love, you know what I'm saying? And we try and maintain that respect between each other. You know, so it's not even, I don't care if Tug Set never ever released music.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's not what it's about. It's just the love and
Who's part of it then? Like,
a few different guys, man.
It's your brother. Your brother's a producer, isn't he?
Yeah. It's a few different guys, man. It's a few different guys. Like, some of my brothers, they've had children, etc.
Yeah.
So they're not really focusing on the music.
Yeah, they can dip in and out when they want.
If they want, like, it's there for them. So that's all it was, man. You know what I'm saying? You can't make people move at a rate that they don't want to move at. So
have you learned lessons like with Tugset and what you're doing now from like the days when you were with the Square?
Yeah, I have learned lessons.
That was like the crew that you were in with. How many other people were in it? There was
a couple guys, though.
Yeah, a couple of guys.
A few guys, man.
Yeah, and that was rolling about, what, like 2014, 15?
Yeah, them times there.
Yeah.
About 17, 18 years old.
Yeah, and then, like, why did you leave the Square?
I left the Square? Because I felt like I was doing way more than what one member should be doing.
Right, yeah.
And I go hard at my own music career, no matter what circumstance I'm in.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter who I'm standing next to.
So yeah.
I just decided, you know what, let me just do what I'm supposed to be doing and just do my thing by myself anyway. Because I was doing it before I even thought of joining up guys together anyway. So, you know, it was cool rolling with a crew for a little while.
But they're still going. They're still doing their thing.
They're doing whatever they're doing. I don't know what they're doing, but... Like, the best thing for me now is rolling with my brother, just me and my brother, because that's my crew from the beginning.
What does he offer? Yeah, exactly, it's the original crew. And your mum is, like, your manager as
my
well.
Mom,
like,
my
you're
uncle.
Literally keeping it in the family.
Keeping it in the family. My mum, my uncle, my little brother designed, my little sister as well.
I could just see your house as, like, some sort of, like, record plant. Like, you know, like, it's a factory line. You're, like, passing it over.
Just we love each other, so that's it.
Man, that is amazing. Like, and it's a very rare thing to have like the family so deep into your music career as well. Like, it shows how much they believe in you and the music that you're doing and the music that your brother's doing and the job that your mum's doing as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk about Skepta. He's genuinely one of my favorite artists outside of not just grime or. Like yourself, like not just grime. I like use as an artist, generally. Like I put it up against like the indie bands that I really like, the punk bands I really like, and the hip hop MCs I really like. But has he been much of an influence on you? You seem fairly tight.
Yeah, yeah, man. Skeppy, he's a great musician, and I used to listen to him a lot when I was young.
He produces his own stuff, just like you as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you feel like it's easier for you if you produce the beat to know how to kick it out?
Yeah, I think anyone who produces and MCs or sings, like if they make their own beats, they understand the dynamics of everything that's going on. They're even going to hear things that the general man might not hear in their beat. You know what I'm saying?
You were on Konnichiwa. It's a great record.
Great record.
Yeah. How did it feel like stepping into the studio and being on that record?
That was funny because I didn't even know I was going on the album. He called me one time. He said, "Hey, Nov, come to my house." Like, I was like, "All right, cool, I'm coming." He sent an Uber to my yard, jumped in it, got there. He's like, "Oh, yeah, I got this beat. Listen to this." Beat was hard. He's like, "Yeah, just lay a lyric." I just did one take, and that's the take that you hear on the album.
You're a one-take wonder?
Yeah, that was it. Ask him, he'll tell you.
that's crazy. Yeah, like that Skepta record is good, and there's so many different people on it. And like a lot of people, I guess, don't realize is that Skepta has actually made lots of records. But yeah. Like for a lot of people, like that's the only record that they know because they're probably getting into it now and probably working their way back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas like
old mixtapes,
Novelist Guy, your debut album.
Yeah,
nobody's on that. It's just you.
Yeah, that's just me, man.
You're like. Right. Well, is that like you were like going, right, this is who I am, or?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I, like, that, even before I linked up with anyone, because I'm sure that I'm cool with so many artists that I don't know if some other artists may be disappointed that I didn't bring them on my album. Or
but it's your album, you can do what you want.
Yeah, or producers as well, because I'm cool with a lot of people, but that wasn't my concern. I've always said to myself from the beginning, I want to make my own album.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I wanted to do. And I did it, and I'm happy with my album.
Will that change, do you reckon? Do you reckon you'll do a record with other people on it, other people producing?
I can't speak for what I haven't really pondered on.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. I mean, like, I'll give you a break. The album only came out, what was it, April? Yeah. Where's the second album? Where's the third album?
I'll tell you what, I was on the road the other day, yeah?
Yeah.
And some youths going, "Hey, Novelist, where's the new music?"
Oh, fuck
off. I said to him, "Man," I said, "What are you talking about? I said, "What are you talking about? I just dropped an album in April." He's like, "What? Blood, that was only a few tunes." I was like, "Bro, you're mad."
Yeah.
Like, So, all right, cool, I understand.
That's the British press in general, though. Like, yeah. The music media, like, people here...
British press, that's the fans, bro.
People demand a lot of our artists in this country, do you know?
Bro, like, I don't even know if that guy who asked me is even really deep to everything I'm saying. Like, has he really taken in what I said on my album? Because if he did, his life should be different now. You know what I'm saying, bro?
You missed the point.
Like, bro, like, that's why I make music.
Yeah, like the record is like humongously indebted to like the UK sound and that the genre that you have been developing as well.
The rough sound.
Rough sound.
Yeah. Rough sound.
Let me see if I can get this right. Grime is 140 BPM.
Yeah.
Right. It's made through skewed beats.
Yeah.
And like almost the cheaper the production software, the better the better the beat, right? It's like somebody told me this, and I don't know if this is bullshit or not. Like, but somebody told me that it was made.
I feel you got me a stitches. Yeah. Because so
like it was like when Grime was like. Pop it right. So when Wiley did his thing in like 2001 with that instrumental and stuff, people were listening to Grime on those old school Sony Ericsson phones that had no bass in them. So because people were listening to them in phones, they weren't putting bass into the tracks. So it was really top heavy treble sounds. I don't know if that's like conspiracy theory shit,
bro,
or
that sounds like a mad conspiracy. I don't think that's how it went down.
No. Yeah, fair enough. Like, I'm man enough to admit I'm wrong.
No, do you know what it is, bro? This is the thing with Grime, yeah, is like Grime is just a mandem genre. Like, it just comes from so many different sounds, and you know, like, if you're from it, you know it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
If you're from it, you definitely know it. So. Even like now, the media, they call so many things grime that's not grime.
That's 100%. Like, you know the one that gets me? Like, I can understand if there's a new artist coming through, right? Yeah. Like, somebody like Young Bane, right? And people are going, oh, grime's taking off. And you're like, Young Bane's not grime.
Young Bane is far from grime.
He doesn't
make grime music.
Yeah. Like, even like... people are saying like, oh, Jay Huss is grime. Like, Jay Huss isn't grime.
He's not grime. Like,
he's not. He's an incredible performer, as is Young Bane. But the one that gets me, because people should know better, right?
What, gigs?
His gig. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Gigs is like, not grime. Like, he's just UK rap.
Like, he's made grime tunes, but he's not a grime artist. No, but like, listen. Gigs would never say he's a grime artist.
No, you listen to like any of his like last two, three albums. Like,
he's not on a grime team. He's not on that. Like, he knows all the grime man because London's London. So you bump into guys, and you know what I'm saying. There's been affiliation from a long time, but it's not a grime thing.
I had gigs on my show a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
and he brought, I think it was either his nephew or his kid in with him.
Yeah,
and we were doing an interview, and I was like shouting to the kid. I was like, who do you like better, Gigs or Tiny Tampa? And the kid just goes, Tiny Tampa. And I was like, burn.
I like a mill.
But like, we were talking about like the vocal tics, the things that people know when they listen to a track, that that's who that track is by.
Yeah.
So like when Rude Kid drops a beat.
Are you ready?
Right. Yeah. When Gigs does his thing, it's it's like an old man getting out of a chair.
Yeah, oh.
But the novelist one, I can't do.
What, N-O-V-D-D-D-D?
Yeah, N-O...
Or the, yeah, or just
N-O-V-D-D-D-E,
that's me.
Yeah, see, I can't do that.
Yeah, you hear different ones, man. I've got all different ones. I've got some new ones that's not out. You might hear one. But obviously, Heady One, he says one. I say one. Like, there's different ones, man. Everyone's got their own thing, man.
Yeah, but I quite like that because like it's a comfort blanket. If you are listening to an artist and it's a new beat and it's new lyrics and it's a new vocal flow, hearing that little or whatever, it brings you back into that safe place where you can enjoy.
Back into that zone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've always really enjoyed that.
I've got my other alias is. My old alias, production alias, is Mr. Tetris, yeah?
Mr. Tetris?
Yeah, because my beats used to sound very 8-bit.
Oh, wow, like so what?
Yeah, exactly like that. Like a game, yeah?
What were you making that on? What software?
I was making it on the same software I'm using now, Reason, but I was just using different sounds because that's what I was into at the time. And my sound, my little sound bite that I had on all of those beats, it used to go, you. So I'm going to bring that back.
I've got one last question for you, right? It's your tips and advice to a younger kid that's coming through in music now, and you have to like give them a piece of wisdom. I feel like you're going to have a really good one, not to put any pressure on you.
Yeah, the best piece of wisdom that I can give someone is search your heart and be honest. Honestly pick your beats, honestly write your lyrics, and just be the true version of you, and don't let anyone tell you that what you did wasn't what it's supposed to be. Like, really search yourself and focus on the sound of your music. Don't focus on the industry. Don't focus on becoming the biggest artist, but focus on having the greatest sound in music, because that's what a true musician is, if that's what you want to be. Now, if you want to be one of these pop guys or one of these music guys who just like known everywhere, I can't really give you advice on that because I'm not that guy myself. But novelists, I'll say, if you really want to go far and have a solid foundation, focus on the sonics of your music and just be true in everything that you do, and people will remember you as a real guy. Yeah, man.
Novelist guy. I'm never gonna get it. Philly T the Rebel MC, that's what I go for. Nov, thank you very much for taking the time out to chat to me. It's been really good, and I've learned a lot.
Respectful, man. Love.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to rate and review it. Spread it around. Perhaps get one of those cones that they use to put out when there's roadworks happening, and maybe lift it up to your lips and aim it towards a group of people and just go, I listen to the Slacker podcast and it's everything to me. Yay! And yeah, if you do that, that's how you spread it around, or that's how you would have spread it around before social media. What the fuck did we used to do before social media? Really? What actually used to happen? Did you used to have to like write down what you liked and then go to the notice board at the town hall and just go, Little Taggart says KFC is amazing. By the way, KFC, if you wanna sponsor me, that'd be happy enough. Maybe in February. Too fat to be sponsored by KFC at the minute. And last but not least, the Slacker Tour is on tour throughout the UK in February the 20th in the Engine Rooms in Southampton, February 21st, Sub 89 in Reading, 22nd of February in Dreamland in Margate. And I've got two live bands playing with me. I've got the Magic Gang and I have got Touts, and I will be DJing myself. So if you want to pick tickets up for that, it'll be in the description below. Right, I'm going back to bed. Listen to me. Listen to the state of me. Blah. I'm sure I'll sound a lot better next week. And if I don't, may God have mercy on us all. See you next week.